I'm going to start with a confession. In my college fraternity, I was not elected social chair. I was not elected rush chair. I was elected vice president, chairman of the judiciary board, quaestor or treasurer charged with making sure all the dues got collected, house manager, whose job it was to shut down parties and to make sure the house didn't get destroyed, and risk manager for life. So to say that I'm a person who does not dwell in the things that are pleasurable and joyful by nature is something of an understatement. Even in my younger years, I found ways to, in my favorite descriptor ever, sit up in my room and worry about things that could never possibly happen. And so it is in the Bible, when I am charged with finding meaning and finding catharsis and finding explanations for why things are the way they are, I naturally turn to things like the books of Kings and Samuel and Psalm 137 and stories of destruction and stories of humanity being awful to one another. And I find comfort in that, because it says we are not living in a particularly bad time. It is something that we have done. But this can be kind of a drag sometimes. And I think that one of the reasons I went into the ministry was to force me to look for the hope in the midst of all of the things that I see around me that are terrible. Look for hope in the Bible too, among all of the stories that are bad. Obviously, the greatest hope of all comes in the New Testament, in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But I like finding Easter eggs hidden and sprinkled throughout the Bible as well. Like this passage from the Song of Songs, this entire book of the Bible just sitting there, waiting to be unearthed by some bored teenager reading through the Bible during a sermon. Some bit of poetry inspiring us to say, maybe there are ways to describe the world that are hopeful and beautiful. Maybe it is a game that we can play with ourselves to find new beauty and new ways to, in the words of Mr. Keating from the Dead Poets Society, woo women. Maybe there is hope for all of us in these words. Now, I do not want to give the commentator a short shrift here. It is entirely possible that I'm reading this entirely wrong, that it is allegory. Or maybe we're both right, that there are all kinds of different ways to read these books in the Bible. Poetry, most of all. In my Buddhism as Literature class in Divinity School, my professor, Charles Halsey, explained that it was considered the highest form of poetry in the Buddhist world to write poems with as many meanings as you can think of or as possible. He described his teacher telling him about one poem. This poem has 13 meanings. I'm really, really good. I can find 7. And it's a reminder, too, that in complex poetry, in poetry that opens itself up to different meanings, what does it mean that my lover is like a gazelle or a young stag? Are the lattices literal or figurative? Is the winter really past? Have the rains come and gone? What is it that we are talking about in this poetry? We can find that it has many meanings, and to read it, just to read through these words over and over again, brings pleasure. Why does it bring pleasure? For one reason, it reminds us that sometimes in someone's arms, it is always spring. In someone's arms, the winter is past. The rains are over, and all you see is the hope of springtime. We are also reminded that the right person to us is like a gazelle or a young stag. And I'm not going to play around and lie to you all. what we know is obviously true, that in our culture, some combination of youth and hormones makes youth attractive on its own. But sometimes, in the right moment, whoever we are looking at is ageless, captured in the height of their powers, like a young stag or a gazelle riding around, or like all of the other metaphors, we're just reading the woman's perspective here and not the male's. There is joy to be found wherever we are, and most of all in relationship with one another. And that is a joy that we can find every day, even in the midst of loneliness, even if it is a faint joy remembered. Or in the midst of loneliness, hope for the future, that joy will come, that this feeling will be felt. But two, there's something else going on here. And this is a poem about joy, and sorry, a sermon about joy, and so I'm not going to get too deeply into the negative things we can find, but it's a reminder that charged with hormones, charged with desire, there is a beauty in sex too. So often we don't engage with it in the church. Karl Barth famously said that all of the sex in the Old Testament is for the purpose of creating children, except for the Song of Solomon. And this is a great truth for us. For as much as we say in society or have said in society that sex is for the purpose of children, or sex is for procreation, or even indeed that sex happens only in marriage, these are obviously false. Sex happens outside of marriage, and lots of sex happens not for the reason of procreation, but because it is beautiful, and because it is pleasurable, and because sometimes you want to feel like a gazelle. And so it's a moment that we remember all of this, that we talk plainly and truly about what it is that we have enjoyed in our lives and what it is we have derived pleasure from, so that we may know what it is we mean to pass on to people who we would dearly like not to procreate quite yet. It is not useful to deny that people have sex because it feels good when we're trying to prevent our daughters and our sons from having kids before they are ready. It is good to admit these things and say, yes, this is true, but yes, either maybe not yet, or maybe let's have a long, long talk before you start down that path. But hey, it's in the Bible, so it's okay to talk about in church. And that's one of the things I want to say today, too, is that this is part of our human experience. This is part of the joys and challenges of being a human, is dealing with sex in our lives. You know, I sometimes think that this is the image we occasionally have in the heritage of our church that goes back to the Puritans, at least on the English side of the UCC, that, you know, relationships are between two faceless people. But it is good to recognize that there is joy that we feel, that there is joy in the bodies that God created in us and for us, and that it is something to be engaged with and adapted, that if we don't talk about this joy and the pleasure that it brings us, we lie to ourselves and to others. And as we seek the meaning of God, as we seek the meaning of our lives on this earth, as we seek to protect our children from things we would rather have them not experience, it is good to be true. And that is why I think this poem found its way into the Bible, to sneak in here a little bit of plain truth, that it is good to be young and in love, and it is good to be old and in love, and it is good to understand what it is we are feeling and to channel all we are feeling into beauty and not ugliness. And so on this day, when a different, bolder preacher would have filled your screen with naked people in body paint, as I was tempted to do, but in the end, I am the risk manager and not the social chair. I ask us to remember the joy and the beauty in our own lives, in our own bodies, in the bodies of those we like and those we love and those we care for, and treat it seriously as this marvelous poet has, whose poetry has endured for thousands of years, and indeed as importantly and as seriously as God has treated it. Amen.